those searchlights up on the tower. Right now. Move! Move!
I listen to 2ARM, 92.1 FM, in the car and at work, for great tunes and community news.
Hello, I'm Herb, and welcome to Community Spotlight. Each week I try and bring in a person or an organisation to talk about an event or themselves. This week I have Julie McCarthy, manager of the UNE Archive Collection, to talk about some great work that's recently been going on. Good morning, Julie.
Good morning, Herb. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for coming in. Another lovely day in Armidale. Now, you tell me, you're Armidale born and bred.
I am. I grew up here in the 80s and went to O'Connor. And then, like many young folk of the day, I left for 20 years and then brought my family back in about 2012.
How did you enjoy growing up in Armidale and going to O'Connor?
Do you know, it was fantastic. The freedom that was there at that time, I think, is something that we can take for granted now, the ability to get out and about and really interact with the spaces. We had, you know, some good cafes, some live music, fun times. So, yeah, and I loved it so much we brought the family back to, you know, have a similar experience. So
I suppose that's the question I was thinking in my mind, is that why did you come back? Was it because it was a comfortable place to bring up children?
Yeah, that was certainly part of it. We had family connections here as well, and that was important for me, for the kids to know their extended family as well. But certainly the schools here are so good. There's so much to do that involves creativity and action and engagement. So I thought it was a really good option for us.
Yeah, I think we're a bit spoilt. Our schooling was very spoilt for choice.
Absolutely.
Here in Armidale, and a long history. You studied at a BA, then you did postgrad in conservatory.
So, yeah, conservation of cultural materials. So paper conservator by training, but that tends to take you into the sphere of collection management and digitisation and disaster management. So that's some of the skill set that I brought back with me.
So I did mention that you're the manager of the UNE Archive Collection. Now, when did you take up that position?
Yeah, that was in July of 2023. And at that time, the archives had been closed for about 12 months. And so my first job really was to reopen that, which we did in September of 2023.
So it closed during COVID?
It did, yes.
So tell me, the staff that you manage there, not only the archives that you manage, but the staff, what's the staff?
Oh, I'm really lucky with that. We're a very new team. They've all started with me over the last 18 months. We have an archives administrator who helps with the day-to-day reading room, which is Dave Green, an archives coordinator, which is David Bialetti. He makes everything run smoothly. And our newest team member is Katie Sentas, and she's our digital collections curator. So it's her that sort of brings together all of the stories that sit behind our collections as we digitise them.
And volunteers are a big part?
Absolutely massive part. We have anywhere between 10 and 14 volunteers working with us at any sort of particular point in time, and we're extremely grateful for the work that they do. They help us with digitisation, creating lists so we understand what's in backlog. The work they do with us is their generosity is amazing.
I think volunteers are very important in every organisation. So if I wanted to be a volunteer at the Archive Collection, how would I become a volunteer?
Oh, sure. You just need to get in contact with us. The easiest way is to probably send us an email at heritage@une.edu.au, or you can drop by at the centre, which is open 9:30 to 1:30 Monday to Thursday.
Located at?
Yes, we are on the block of the old Teachers College. We're not in the Teachers College. We're in the concrete bunker down on the corner of Dangar and Kentucky Streets.
Okay, and we're always after volunteers. Mm-hmm. The archives, the paper archives or the actual physical content of the archive, can you explain what that is?
Oh, sure. So basically, we collect documentation that has to do with the social history of the New England area. So that's actually really massive for us, firstly, for people to understand. It goes up to the Queensland border, out to Brewarrina and Moree, down to Gunnedah and across to the coast from Taree up. So it's a massive collecting area, and we've been collecting since the 1950s. So the sorts of things that we have are an enormous collection of photographs, over 10,000 glass plate negatives, and then tens of thousands of other photographic material. We have documents that relate to organisations and farms. We have diaries and letters that go back through to the 1820s. We have maps and we have audiovisual material as well. So it's a really vibrant collection, and it covers an enormous amount of material and that social life of a lot of people in New England.
So before we get into this new announcement that we're going to make about how that has somewhat changed slightly, how did people use the archives in the past?
So we had a website where we had a collection of Excel spreadsheets that gave people a little bit of an idea about what might be in our collection and how that might help them with their research or study. And then they would get in contact with us, they'd either phone us or email, and then with a very sort of broad request usually, and then we would go and actually try and find material for them. Sometimes they would then have to come to the archives in person to view that material. Other times we might have been able to do some digitisation to make that available for them.
So the thing we're going to talk about is this new advancement called the UNE Collections Gateway. So that's changed from what you've just explained, the paper, physical, come in, get a copy, you know, apply for it, request it, and someone to actually go and retrieve it and give it to the people. That's changed it completely. Now tell me what this UNE Collections Gateway is.
Sure. So basically what we're dealing with, Herb, is it's an online repository. So what we do is we actually make things that are publicly available, for example, a vast amount of our photographic material that we either hold copyright for or is out of copyright. We can digitise that material, people can find it for themselves, they can download it for themselves, and they can use it for their research, for their study, for their family history. There are also some things that we want to be able to have people be able to engage and search the collections in depth themselves. So where we do have some restrictions about people having to visit them on site, we can at least give you really itemised lists so that people can search through and understand whether or not there's collection material that's there that's worth them visiting. I suppose that's the difference.
And what drove this desire or push to, you know, get it all digitised?
Absolutely. Well, to be honest, archives try to be democratic spaces, okay? And so for me, that equity of access to the story that involves all of us around the region is really important. And so what this does is it takes away the problem of distance to people accessing their story or their family story or the history of the region. Basically, by putting this stuff online, people can actually find the information for themselves and see themselves in our story, in our regional story.
Well, we'll get to how people access it a little bit later, but I just want to pull apart six different materials in the Gateway. The first one is the University of New England and Regional Archives. Now, that's relating to our social history of the New England region?
That's exactly right. So the sorts of material that we have in there are photographs, early maps. We have a lot of station records, so things like ledgers and diaries and letter books and wage books, which tell a lot about the social history and for family history, often connect people back to a time and a place where they can actually understand where their families may have worked. So if you had a family that was working on a property rather than owning a property, this was a way to actually work out where and what your family were doing. So that archive collection is really powerful. We also have a marvellous collection of oral history recordings that were done between the 1980s and the 1990s by Professor Janice Wilton. And they actually talk about the immigrant story in the 1950s. And so we're talking about a lot of non-English speaking migration, talking a lot about the lives of shopkeepers. It's a fascinating collection, cafe owners and miners, all of those sorts of stories about people coming to make a new start in Australia. There's lots of really wonderful stories in there, and this way we can actually get that information out.
The Museum of Antiquities is another collection. What's that?
Oh, that's wonderful. That's one that is run by Dr. Bronwyn Hopwood. She was really excited to get on board with us so that the antiquities collection could also be shown in its complexity. It's another really old collection. The classics and archaeology has always been really strong at UNE. And so this collection started in 1959 and it covers the globe. It's really strong, but it covers the entire world. There's Greek, Roman, all sorts of stuff going on there. What's exciting about that is that links out to another portal, which is 3D imaging of all of those assets. So people can actually go and have a look at the items and then play around with them and twist them around virtually to actually be able to see what they look like on all sides.
Oh, nice. The Campbell Howard Collection?
Oh, that's actually, it's a collection of early Australian plays, mostly from the early 20th century, through to about 1955. It's actually a very well-known collection in the circle, and it's a really important one because most of them are unpublished. So it actually gives a really good indication of that sort of theatre history in the early 20th century.
Another one is the Hod and Not Collection?
Yeah, that's a wonderful collection of Aboriginal language material. So that was collected by Bill Hodnot in the 70s and 80s. And so we have from around the New England area particularly, and it's a wonderful collection.
The Gordon Athol Anderson Music Collection.
So, yes, another UNE academic who left that collection to us. He was a medieval music scholar. And his library is still recognised as being really, really strong in the area. He was very well regarded. And we've just started a new collection sort of direction there where we are having original manuscripts that we are purchasing. There is an endowment fund that sits with that. And so we have medieval manuscripts that are being purchased through that endowment fund and being made available then as well online.
So you mentioned medieval scripts. Does that mean that the music collection is predominantly medieval music?
Yes. He was a specialist in that area, and we do still have current research and teaching that's being done in that area as well. So it's actually quite a well-used collection, actually.
The last one on the list here I've got is rare books held by UNE Dixon Library.
Again, yes. When the university was first started, the library was actually started through donations of a number of significant people. And so there was the White family who donated some rare books. There was also one of the university librarians contributed to that, but we also had people like William Dixon and Beasley who donated as well. It's a fascinating collection. Early journeys we have, it's eclectic. It's one of those things you really have to try for yourself. But there's also some really strong in botany and zoology, early botany and zoology as well. So it's great.
You just mentioned a couple of the UNE faculties. What's the connection with learning at UNE and teaching and the students with this collection, it's this digitised collection?
Thanks, Herb. It's actually really exciting, and it's one of the things that we're really hoping will bring some value. As I said, 85% of our students are online. So we have a wonderful digital theatre storytelling unit at UNE. And the Theatre Studies group have been really excited about working with us so that we can create and share original content with their students in a way that will enhance their teaching and learning. We're also working with the humanities to actually embed some practical experience for students when they do come up for res schools or something like that, or even online opportunities for them to explore collection management in a digital space as well. So it adds value across the board, really.
I think you might have mentioned there's over 8,000 records on the database now that people can research, but that's increasing all the time?
Absolutely. This is very much the sort of beginning of that next phase of archives for us. So every week we will be putting up new photographs and new documents that people can use. And really importantly, Herb, we're also going to be going back to some of our original donor families and asking, can we change some of the original donation requirements that were made before the idea of digitisation or digital spaces even existed, and asking them, can we actually now share that material online?
So we've mentioned the word digitised a few times.
Oh, indeed.
What's the platform that is digitised? Is it Recollect?
That's right. So that's actually a specialised collection management system that is all about getting collections online and allowing people to engage with them. So it's actually a New Zealand company, but we have all the data stored in Australia. We have a digital preservation platform that sits behind it. So when we upload material, we automatically have copies made to make sure that they stay safe into the long term, which is really important as we move into that born digital material, as we call it, you know, where something that's never had a physical presence, it's always been, you know, a JPEG or a TIFF, it's never actually been a printed piece of paper, and they are far more fragile than a lot of people realise. And so to have that preservation module that sits behind that helps us ensure that those things get kept.
So do the volunteers do the digitising? So the platform is Recollect, so do you get the volunteers to help with the digitising, or how does that all work?
Well, it's always about finding jobs that that suit the right people. So some people like digitising. Some of our volunteers do it and do a beautiful job of it. Others are more interested in other things that we do in the archive. But certainly we have to give a shout out to Roger Epps, who has taken photographs of over 1,500 of our maps to actually upload that to Recollect.
Well, he is a geographer.
Well, exactly. But it is that generosity that always inspires me. Like, we've also got Jenny Evans, whose father was Dr. David Evans out at the university, did this beautiful calligraphic work of Beowulf, like a transcription, illuminated, absolutely glorious, and she's been coming and helping us to digitise that, to put that in the collection as well. So I think part of what I love is the vibrancy of things. We are such an interesting region, and that plays out in really interesting ways in the archive, I think. The donor families are also Melanie Oppenheimer, who is also one of our volunteers. Her family have donated an enormous amount of material. So we have Niverson material about Marani in Ohio. Gillian Oppenheimer was her mother, a very well-known historian in the region. She has been so generous with her time to help put context around those collections. So, yeah, and that involves sometimes arranging permissions around digitisation of certain selection of objects for that, recommending that, and then doing the digitisation for us. And then we upload it into Recollect.
So is there a limit to how much that you'd be able to store? Because I remember first coming to uni here, there was a whole room that was one computer that was that was in a whole room. But yeah. So I'm sort of wondering, how are you storing all this stuff, and how is there a limit?
It's a really good question. So basically we have a storage, there is no limit. We have a storage that we purchase as part of the agreement that we do with this, and that includes the preservation backup as well. So in reality, it's about, there always will have to be some curation, basically, Herb, around this. So we won't be able to upload absolutely everything. But what we're trying to do is upload a really representative, you know, an inclusive and diverse collection of material for a region. And then there will always be the option to get in contact with us and say, do you have anything on? And we can go from there.
So you mentioned a region, I think, right at the beginning, but I want to just reiterate, what is the region of the collection?
Absolutely. So we go all the way up to the Queensland border, all the way to the coast, all the way out as far as Brewarrina. We go around Moree. We come down to Gunnedah, and then we go across to Murrundi and down to Taree, Port Macquarie, around that area there. So it's a pretty massive collecting area.
So is it appropriate then to give a call out if anybody has an interest in these types of antiquities and archives in that region, they can access it through the UNE Collection Gateway?
They can. And one of the wonderful things and really powerful things about this, Herb, is that people can actually add their story to an image or to an item, or they can actually suggest an edit if they think something has been misnamed. So it's actually a really powerful tool for community to be able to look at their history and go, that's not quite right. That bridge is not over that river, it's over this river. Do you know what I mean? That date can't be right because this building wasn't there then. It's that sort of information. We have some amazing family historians as well who can maybe look at our photographic collections and go, oh, that's great, Aunt Janice. That's, you know, that sort of connection that can be made when you actually have a capacity to look at those things. And they can all be done online, so we can have volunteers that work from home.
Well, maybe it's a job for me. I've got a trunk at home with photographs back to the late 1800s of family, so
beautiful.
I might be coming in. So tell me, how do people access it? This is the important thing. This is where the rubber meets the road. How do we actually access it?
Absolutely. It's really simple. The website is collections.une.edu.au. And if you go to that site, basically you can browse as a guest, if you like, and just have a bit of a look through and see what we've got. If you wanted to do something like make a suggested edit or upload a photo of your own to add to our collection or add a story to a piece, or help us transcribe our documents, which you can also do online. Then you have to become a member, and that's free. You just need to sign on and you'll have a password that will go with that.
Pretty standard approach with most platforms.
Absolutely, and very like Trove. If people think about, you know, how much community engagement goes on with Trove about correcting newspapers when they do an automatic transcription and things like that, you can do that on this platform as well. So, you know, if you're really interested in letters that were written in the late 19th century by someone on a station, you can read them, do them, and transcribe them for us, and that would be brilliant.
Just a question then about photographs. You'd have to have some of the content behind the photographs. It's not just,
absolutely,
it's no use to come in.
No. Unfortunately, we do have a fair few, like, woman on horse standing by tree, but there's usually a little bit more context around them than that. But one of the things that you can do is actually tag a photo. So like you would on Facebook, you can actually make a tag and go, I know who that person is. So that can be really important sometimes for community members that may not have had a lot of photographs of their own families taken, or but still actually recognise people in the background, or know a context and a time where they can actually match those people together. They may have one photo, but then by going to this collection, they may be able to see three more. So it's really quite lovely. I suppose the one thing I would say, though, we understand that that's probably a slightly different, it'll be a slightly different setup. So Katie sent us, our curator, has actually put together a little YouTube video on a walkthrough of the gateway, so people can see in 5 minutes pretty much what the system does for them and how they use it. So that's pretty
handy. That's probably at front of page at the collection?
It is, or you can just type in YouTube UNE Collections Gateway Walkthrough and
all right, and get
it
there.
Yeah,
just going back to those photos, just for my own photos,
yeah,
I know
sure.
There's people on horses and probably two or three names and a date, maybe a location, but then the other people in the photo aren't named. So this process maybe might help similar examples where you've got a couple of bit of information, maybe the core information about where it is and the date and a couple of people, but then you can find out other people can contribute.
Absolutely, and it's really interesting because you never quite know what people are going to be searching for. So sometimes it's by adding a bit of context around, you know, there's a series of eucalypt trees in the background and, you know, sometimes people are looking for landscape or, you know, like flora of the time and seeing how that landscape's changed. So knowing that there's a picture there that has specific things in the background, even just clearly saying what is there can sometimes be helpful. And also keep in mind, sometimes we'll have been given a collection of photos, of family photos, and one or two of them may have the name, but that person may appear in 20 of those photos. And so may or may not have carried across in the data when we first found it. But by people looking at the collection as a whole going, oh no, hang on, that's them too. And sort of they can add that way. So it becomes a really, it's fun. It's a bit addictive, but it is fun.
Well, you mentioned Facebook before. And the interesting thing I'm just sort of working through in my head as we're talking is that a lot of the Facebook pages are set up as history groups.
Mm.
Older people tend to enjoy their history as they get old and find out where they come from and to collect history. Mm. But those history pages, if those history pages like Saumarez Ponds, for example, history page on Facebook had access to some of the stuff in the archives here, they'd be actually a very valuable contributor to improving the capture of the history of Saumarez Ponds, for example.
Absolutely. And what's wonderful about this system is that every individual item has a really easy URL link that will actually be attached to it. So it's really easy to share these things on Facebook. It's really easy to actually share them with your community of peers, whatever that looks like. But also to understand that for me, when I think of longevity, those Facebook posts and those Facebook groups are really important. They're collecting some really important social history. So my question around that is, how do we make sure we preserve that? Because some of that stuff will not be anywhere else.
Well, but then again, it's a two-way path then. If people on the Facebook, on the history page, have access to the collection, they can draw in items from the collection.
Absolutely.
Into that Facebook page, share it around, you know, 100,000, 10,000, 100,000 members or whatever it is, and then they can contribute, and then that information comes back into the collection.
It does. And hopefully as well, Herb, there might be instances where people would say, wow, you're missing this part of the regional story. And maybe then we have discussions with them about how we can share that information the other way, because for us, that it's that option, we can preserve it digitally in perpetuity. Sometimes it's difficult, as you know, sometimes groups rise and fall with interest and over time. So it's another insurance policy almost about making sure that material can be saved.
To me, it's certainly a Pandora's box.
Oh, it is. It is. You know, gets me up in the morning though.
Yeah. Look, I think we might tie it up. There's so much here. I think in 12 months' time, we should come back in and... So we said around 8,000 items on the digital collection at the moment. 12 months' time, there might be double that.
I hope so, that and a little bit more, but we'll do our best.
Yep. So let's go back to a couple of things. So if you want to get access, if you want to access the collections gateway, you go collections.une.edu.au. Mm-hmm. And you can join as a guest or become a member. Doesn't cost you anything. And you can start using it for what it's purpose for.
Absolutely. It's lots of fun. And check out the finding aids. They will help you when you first arrive.
And the YouTube page. There's a YouTube page about the tour, the UNA Archive Collection YouTube tour. Now, the other last thing I mentioned, you are hoping to work more with schools locally.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, we would love to be able to... So, first of all, open for people to come and actually have a look through the archives, for people to understand that there's still that physical stuff that sits behind this. But really importantly as well, it's a great way to be able to get the local history into the school curriculum for history and geography even, actually, to be honest. We would love to speak to schools that might be interested in working with us.
So could we call out now if there was any school history teachers or librarians? Or
definitely librarians.
Just to come in, drop in or... send an email or...
Absolutely. And again, if they send an email to heritage@une.edu.au and just go, attention, Julie, and it'll come through to me and I'll make sure that I get in touch.
Well, I think that's a fantastic thing. Well, congratulations, Julie, on the path that you've taken. I think it's very exciting. Although it is a Pandora's box, as I said before, there's got to be a lot of stuff going on here. And I invite you to come in 12 months' time and let's see where you're at.
I would love that, Herb. Thanks very much. And thanks for having me. It's been really great. Yeah.
No, thank you for coming in. And that is Community Spotlight.
Broadcast, then podcast. If you missed it or want to hear it again, then visit our webpage, 2arm.net.au/podcast. I listen to 2ARM, 92.1 FM, in the car and at work, for great tunes and community news.